Welcome to Defenders, the teaching class of Dr. William Lane Craig. Today, The Existence of God, Part 32. For more information and resources, go to reasonablefaith.org.
Well, we've been talking about the problem of suffering in the world, and I suggested that this is the most potent of the atheistic arguments that is on offer today. And I distinguish two versions of this problem, an intellectual version and an emotional version. And in looking at the intellectual problem of evil, we saw that this also comes in two versions, a logical version and a probabilistic version. And according to the logical version of the problem of suffering, it's logically impossible that God and evil coexist, or that God and suffering coexist. According to the probabilistic version, it's possible that God and suffering coexist, but nevertheless, it's highly improbable. And thus, given the suffering in the world, it's improbable that God exists. Now, what we want to do this morning is begin to examine the logical version of the intellectual problem of evil. And the key to this argument is the atheist claim that it's impossible that God and the suffering in the world coexist. The atheist is basically saying that the following two statements are logically inconsistent with each other. Number one, God is all-powerful and all-good. God is all-powerful and all-good. And the second statement is that suffering exists. And the proponent of the logical version of the problem of evil is saying that these two propositions cannot both be true. Now, the obvious question that arises when we put the problem in this way is, why think that these two propositions are logically inconsistent with each other? After all, one is not the negation of the other. So there's no explicit contradiction between these two statements. The atheist must think that these are somehow implicitly contradictory. But in that case, he must have some hidden assumptions which would bring out this implicit contradiction and make it explicit. So the question is, what are those hidden assumptions? Well, they seem to be two in number. First would be number three, that if God is all-powerful, then he can create any world that he wants. If God is all-powerful, he can create any world that he wants. And the second one would be number four, if God is all-loving, then he would prefer a world without suffering. If God is all-loving, then he prefers a world without suffering. And the idea here is that God is all-powerful, and therefore he can create any world that he wants. He's all-good, and therefore he prefers a world without suffering. Thus, God is both capable of creating, and he prefers a world without suffering. Therefore, suffering does not exist. But that contradicts number two, that suffering exists. So, it shows that there is a contradiction between God and suffering. Given that suffering exists, it follows that God does not exist. Given the presence of suffering, we know that there is no God. Now, before we examine this argument, let me just ask, is there any comprehension-type question about the atheistic statement of the logical version of the problem of evil? Not a critical comment, but just a comprehension-type question. Okay, we've got one over here, I see. Oh, right here. Okay, Michelle, yes.
In statement number one, you say he's all-powerful and all-good, but statement four, he's all-loving. Is there a difference?
No, you could have all-loving in there if you want. I think all-good would comprise being all-loving, because being loving is part of being good. Behind you there, Don has a comment or question.
My comment, Bill, is in order to use the first argument, would you not have to define all-powerful and define all-good, and you would only be able to define them in terms that we understand? Is that not correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that you don't really know what he's saying.
Well, no, you would just ask, what do you mean by all-powerful? Okay. What do you mean by all-good? And we'll see that at least with regard to being all-powerful, that does require some finessing here in assessing the truth of three. But by being all-good, I think the atheist would just say what we normally mean by a good person or a loving person. If you say that a good person makes people suffer unnecessarily and without any reason for it at all, then you're just using the word good in a idiosyncratic way that isn't what we normally mean by goodness. So the words here are not intended to be peculiar. They're intended to be used in the normal way that Christians would affirm when we say that an all-powerful and all-good or all-loving God exists. Okay, Cindy?
What seems the element that's missing in the logical sequence is that there's the assumption that God, that man in its relationship to God, that he has no free will outside of God, that God is in control of every aspect of the reality.
Okay, I think what you're doing now is raising a critical issue rather than a comprehension issue, and I think you're right.
There doesn't seem to be a logical conclusion presented here in my way of looking
at
it.
Well, no, I think that the logic here is fine. I think that the conclusion does follow correctly that if God is all-powerful and all-good, and these two assumptions are necessarily true, then it's impossible that suffering exists. So the question will be, are these two assumptions true?
Well, it seems like to me all of them could be true.
All of them what?
Could be true.
Well, that's going to be the question. If they're all true, then I think we got a real problem.
Well, think about, let's just say the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
God preferred there was no suffering. Heaven, there's no suffering. So all of those are true.
Well, we'll see. Hang on, and we'll see whether or not they're all true. I'm more skeptical than you are that three and four are necessarily true. But again, we're just taking comprehension questions here, not critical questions. Bob?
Yeah, the critical verb to me is prefers in number four. If God prefers a world without suffering, then this is okay. In other words, if you'd have to substitute for prefers, he demands a world without suffering. Uh-huh. In other words, if he merely prefers one, that does not rule out that he would allow one, temporarily at least, for a greater good. In other words, to demonstrate some attribute of his. So this doesn't seem to be logically...
Well, let's substitute a different word for prefers then, like God would choose, say. If God is all-loving, he would choose a world without suffering. That's what the premise means.
I think you'd have to substitute the word demand or would not allow any other word.
Okay, would not allow suffering.
Okay.
We can use that instead for premise three, that if God is all-loving, he would not allow suffering to exist in the world.
Okay.
I'm not trying to...
No, I understand.
Load these terms with lots of special meanings, but and then you'll do what I'm going to do. You'll challenge the truth of four.
The truth of whether he would allow it or
right.
not. Right.
Okay, but you understand the basic argument, though, is the same, that an all-loving God, if he exists, wouldn't allow this suffering in the world. Yes. Okay, one more comprehension question.
Just quickly, doesn't this argument overall violate the atheistic moral realism thing you went through? In other words, they're using good, which in a prior argument... you presented essentially that they don't believe in a good.
All right, let's understand this about the logical version of the problem of evil. What the logical version of the problem of evil does is try to expose an internal contradiction in the Christian worldview. So the atheist is not affirming that it's true that God is all good. He's just saying, you Christians believe one. You Christians believe too. You don't think suffering is illusory, as Hindus do. And yet one and two are contradictory with each other. So he has exposed an internal contradiction within the Christian worldview. And so that's why there's no problem with the moral realism. All right, well, what might be said in response to this logical version of the problem of suffering? Well, in order for this argument to be logically valid, both of the hidden assumptions need to be necessarily true. And the question is, are they each necessarily true? Well, let's think about them. Think about number three, that if God is all-powerful, he can create any world that he wants. Is that necessarily true? Well, I think, as Cindy has already suggested, well, it's not necessarily true if it's possible that people have freedom of the will. You see, it's logically impossible to make someone do something freely. It's logically impossible to make someone do something freely. That's as logically impossible as making a married bachelor or a round square. So God's being all-powerful doesn't mean that he can do the logically impossible. Indeed, there really aren't any such things as the logically impossible. Those are just self-contradictory combinations of words, like square, circle, or married, bachelor. So God does not necessarily have the ability to create just any world that he wants if it's possible that human beings have genuine freedom of the will. Now, if the unbeliever insists at this point that an omnipotent God, an all-powerful God, most certainly does have the power to do the logically impossible, well, then the problem of evil just evaporates automatically, because then he can bring it about that one and two are both true, even though they're logically contradictory to each other. So the atheist shoots himself in the foot if he says God can do the logically impossible because he's omnipotent. Well, then there is no problem posed by suffering. God can bring it about that these two logically incompatible propositions are both true. So if it's possible that people have free will, it turns out that three is not necessarily true, because there may be possible worlds in which the people don't freely do the things that God would prefer for them to do. They can refuse to do what God desires. So there might be any number of possible worlds that are not feasible for God to create because the people in them wouldn't do the right thing. In fact, when you reflect on it, it's possible that in any world of free persons, which has as much good as the actual world does, there would also be this much suffering. There's no guarantee whatsoever that in some other world of free persons with this much good, there would be less suffering. Now, notice that conjecture doesn't need to be true. It doesn't need to be probable. It just needs to be possible. And as long as that's possible, it shows that it's not necessarily true that if God is all-powerful, he can create just any world that he wants. So, assumption three is simply not necessarily true, and therefore the atheist argument is logically invalid. Any question about the failure of the proposition three, that first hidden assumption? Yes, Dee?
Seems like God would be able to create any world he wants, but he may not prefer to create, like he could create a world without free will. And so he could choose not to create free will. So I think you really, probably the problem gets a little bigger. You need to have the best of all possible worlds.
Well, I don't think so, Steve. Certainly God could create a world without any free creatures in it at all. He could create a world that has no higher life forms than rabbits, say. That's certainly within God's power. But there may be worlds, for example, worlds of free persons that involve as much moral good as this world does, but he doesn't have the ability to create them because, and say there in these possible worlds, these persons would never sin. There would be no evil. There would be no suffering. God may not have the ability to create those worlds because if he tried to create those people in those circumstances, they wouldn't cooperate and they wouldn't do the right thing. So there's any number of possible worlds that are logically possible for God to create, but they're not actually feasible for him to create because the people in them wouldn't cooperate. They would freely go wrong.
Right. He can choose to create any world he wants. What you're saying is he can't choose one that's logically inconsistent, which
would
be...
Well, no, I'm not saying that. Let's imagine a world without sin in which there are lots of free people, and in every moral situation they find themselves in, they always make the right choice. That's a logically possible world. There's nothing illogical or self-contradictory about a world like that. But what I'm saying is that that kind of a world may not be feasible for God to create, because if he created those people in those circumstances, they might freely go wrong. And so that world wouldn't come about. And it's not within God's control to make them always do the right thing. If he did that, that removes their freedom. So this leads to this rather paradoxical conclusion, but I think quite a correct conclusion, that there are worlds which in and of themselves are logically possible. There's no inconsistency in a world in which people always freely do the right thing, but those worlds may not be feasible for God to create, because in order to do that, he would have to override their free will, and in these worlds we're imagining people do have free will. Okay, let's have some other comment or question on this. Drew?
I'm curious how you reconcile this with the doctrine of heaven. Like, is it possible for people in heaven to sin? I mean, if it's even possible, given an infinite future, eventually, like, every free agent in heaven would sin.
I think there are a couple of ways to deal with this. This comes up in my debate with the philosopher Ray Bradley on the question of hell. And what I point out in that debate is that heaven is not itself a possible world. Heaven is the result of a state that leads up to heaven, where people have freely chosen to obey and worship God, and so they are rewarded and go to heaven. It's not as though God could just sort of scale away or take off this pre-mortem state and just create heaven by itself, because heaven is the state which is the result of all these prior choices. Now, if he did try to create such an isolated world, then you've got a new world on your hand, you see. And it might very well be the case that then the people would go wrong and do the wrong thing. Now, the deeper question posed by your question is, well, in heaven, will people have the freedom to sin or not? And I think there are a couple of ways that one might respond to this. There isn't any sort of orthodox doctrine on this. I think a couple of sorts of responses are possible. One would be that people in heaven do have the freedom to sin, but God has chosen the elect to be only those who, if they were in heaven, would always freely choose to do the right thing. And so even though they have the ability to sin, they just won't exercise it. The other thing you could say, and this I find very plausible, is that the freedom to sin is effectively removed in heaven by coming to see Christ in all of his beauty and glory and purity. I think that the human will to evil will simply be overcome by the powerful and immediate presence of Christ. So that just like iron filings sticking to a gigantic magnet, there wouldn't be the ability to fall away, because Christ is seen in all his magnificence will be so attractive, so irresistible, that the freedom to sin will be removed. But again, that is only the result of a pre-mortem condition in which people are created at a sort of arm's length from God in all his glory, and thus have the freedom to respond or refuse to believe in him during this veil of decision-making until we get to heaven. Bruce?
A couple of things. It seems like this on this third point, it's a resurrection, if you will, of the old chestnut. Can God make a stone so big he can't move it? So if we're saying God can make a world where there's moral choice, then it would violate one of his attributes to say he should make it where there are no moral choices.
Yeah, it is similar to that in that the idea of making a stone too heavy for God to lift is a logically incoherent task. It's and therefore it doesn't affect divine omnipotence. An almighty being doesn't need to have the ability to make a stone too heavy for God to lift. Similarly, a being who is almighty doesn't need to have the ability to make people freely do something, because that's also logically incoherent. And if that's right, then that means that there may be worlds that God isn't capable of creating, because if the people in them are free, he's got to stand back and let them make their choices. And it may be that in all of those worlds, somebody at least goes wrong, and that therefore there are no worlds that are completely free of evil or of suffering.
Evil began in heaven, but also the
right. When I say people, right. I would expand this to mean creatures right. of any sort that have free will, whether you think of this as angels or persons or right. even extraterrestrials, right.
And the sin question is, it negates time. You know, there's been an experience of with sin and with Satan and with sin in heaven. So that's something that in the original creation, you wouldn't, or before the creation, you wouldn't have this example. So believers, whether they're going to sin in heaven, they know the consequences of sin and having seen an angel sin in heaven and being cast out and so forth. So those portions of the argument would negate those experiences in that time.
So you're responding to the point Drew was making about sin in heaven. Okay, any other question about the failure of the argument due to three's not being necessarily true? Yeah, Ted.
Dr. Craig, I can't see what number three is from here because I don't have long-range vision this morning. But the thing about it, about sin in heaven, you know, in the Bible it says, of course, that Jesus was slain before the foundation of the earth. And so God, in his knowledge, knew that when he built us, however he built us, that we were going to fail right off the bat. Sure. I'm sure that while he was sitting around in eternity past with Jesus, and he says, well, let's create a few billion angels, one of which is going to sin and take a third of them down away from us, you know, and there's going to be a conflict. You, my son, I'm going to call on later on to be the focal point of all eternity as what will separate the sin from the saved.
Right. We're not talking here about God's knowledge of the future or what will happen in the actual world. What we're talking about here is God, so to speak, prior to creation and contemplating the different worlds that he might make. And one of these worlds would be a world in which there are all these free persons, and in every situation they always do the right thing, so that there's no sin, no evil in that world. What I'm suggesting is that God's being omnipotent doesn't mean that he has the power to create that world. And the reason is because he doesn't have the ability to make the creatures freely do what's logically possible for them to do, so that they might go wrong. And if they did, then that world wouldn't come about. Yes, Tom? Oh, yes, first down here, yeah.
I'm not sure if it's logically possible for there to be a world in which all people freely choose to do good. In every choice they have, they always choose good. I'm not sure how God creating that world would mean that he's making them freely choose good. And because of that, it's not feasible for him to create that world.
Now, first of all, you said you weren't sure that there is such a possible world where people always freely do the right thing. Is that right?
Well, no, I don't see any reason why there wouldn't be such a possible world.
Then if you say this is logically necessary, that free creatures sin, that would seem to negate human freedom. If you say that sin is logically necessary, that seems to be just completely contrary to free will. In any moral situation in which a person is free, he has the ability either to do the right thing or to do the wrong thing. And if you say that sin is logically necessary, then I don't see how you could say that person is free. So it seems to me that there's no inconsistency in imagining a world of free people in which in every moral situation they find themselves, they always freely do the right thing. So it seems to me that such a world is logically possible.
I agree with you. That's
okay. So now the question is it feasible for God to make that world? And that will depend upon whether or not, if those people were in those circumstances, they would freely choose to do the right thing. it's possible that they do the right thing. You see, that's all that proves, that there's a possible world like that, is that it's possible that they would do the right thing. But would they if they were in those situations? And it may well be the case that they wouldn't. And that if God is going to allow them to be free, he has to allow them to sin and go against him. So even though that world is possible, it wouldn't be actual if God were to try to create those people in those circumstances, because they would go wrong. Yeah, Marcus?
We are all talking about suffering as something that's caused by men, by free will. But how about natural disasters, for instance?
Right. We're not here talking about natural disasters because we're dealing simply with this question, Marcus. If God is all-powerful, does that mean that he can create any world that he wants? And I'm suggesting that that isn't necessarily true, that God's options may well be limited, and that therefore this argument fails. So we're not trying to hear to give an account of natural suffering. We're just examining the truth of this third assumption, and I'm suggesting that it's not necessarily true. The atheist would have to show us that there's a world feasible for God. Well, he'd have to even show us more than that, really. I mean, I don't know how the atheist could show us this, that any possible world is within God's ability to make. It seems to me the atheist would have to show that freedom of the will is impossible in order to carry this third point. He would have to show that freedom of the will is impossible. Otherwise, there are going to be worlds where God may well find himself unable to actualize those worlds because the people wouldn't freely cooperate. Let's see, was there a question from Tom? Or?
I have sort of.
Okay, go ahead.
I touched it, I think. But are you saying that it is possible for God to create a world in which creatures always choose to do the right thing? That is possible.
Well, no, I think this is a very technical use of terms. What I'm saying is that a world like that is possible. A world like that is a possible world.
Okay.
But it may not be feasible for God to do it because it is logically impossible to make people do the right thing. And so he finds himself incapable of bringing about that sort of a world.
So does that mean that we assume that given free will, people will not always do the right thing unless they're made to?
No, and that we're not assuming that, and that was a point I could have made
right,
here earlier as well. What we're just saying is that it might be the case. Remember, the atheist is making a very strong claim here that it is impossible for God and the suffering in the world to coexist. So we don't need to show that it is in fact the case that in order to bring about a world in which people always freely do the right thing, or that God would have to make them always do the right thing, as long as it's possible that people have free will, it may be the case that God finds himself confronted with a situation in which any world that involves, say, this much good would also have this much moral evil in it. All right, let me move on to the fourth assumption and address that. If God is all loving, he prefers a world without suffering, or would choose a world without suffering. Is that necessarily true? Well, again, as I think about it, it just doesn't seem like this is necessarily true. God could have overriding reasons for allowing the suffering in the world. We all know cases where we permit suffering in order to bring about a greater good. C.S. Lewis once remarked, "What do people mean when they say, 'I'm not afraid of God because I know that he is good'? Have they never even been to the dentist?" I think that illustration shows that many times we permit suffering for some greater good. Now, the atheist might say, "Well, but God wouldn't be limited in that way. He could just bring about the greater good directly." But clearly, given freedom of the will, again, that may not be possible. Some goods, for example, moral virtues, require freedom of the will. They can't just be created in a puppet. They need to have free creatures in order to have moral virtues brought about. And so it may well be the case that God finds that a world in which there is suffering may be, on balance, better than a world with no suffering at all. And at least that's possibly the case. And if that's possibly the case, then 4 is just not necessarily true. It's not necessarily true that God would prefer a world without any suffering in it. So it seems to me that both of the key assumptions made by the atheist are not necessarily true, and therefore the argument is doubly invalid. Bob.
I get back to my emphasis on the word prefers. I maintain that number 4 is absolutely and completely true. He does prefer a world with no suffering. He allows one with suffering, which presumably comes from sin, because of a greater good. Now, a biblical example of this would be his position in divorce. In Malachi, it says flat out, God hates divorce. And yet the Pharisees came to Christ and asked him about this, and he said, well, why did Moses allow a certificate of divorce? He says he did it because men's hearts were hard. So he has two wills, which we know. He has his overriding will, which is in agreement with his overall attributes, but then he has a permissible will, which he will allow something that goes against what he really likes. He will allow it temporarily for a greater good, as you said. So even though I maintain that 4 is absolutely true, I see nothing wrong with that statement. The problem is that even though he prefers not to have it, he will allow it.
Okay, well, if you say that, then you will simply say that 3 is not necessarily true, even if 4 is, and therefore the argument still fails.
Oh, it does fail, yeah.
But I'm not even convinced, Bob, that 4 is true. For example, take the great good that has resulted as a result of the crucifixion of Christ and his death. I could well imagine that it's true that God would prefer a world in which that great good comes about, which necessitates sin, than a world in which, say, nobody ever does anything wrong, so that there's no moral evil in the world, but nevertheless, it lacks this great good of Christ's crucifixion and death. Maybe, say, a world in which he only creates 3 people, and they all do the right thing, and then they die, and that's it. I could well believe that God would prefer a world filled with suffering and some great good, like, say, Christ's suffering and death on the cross, over that world with 3 people in it and the limited good that would be brought about by that. So I don't think even 4 is necessarily true.
One other example, too, is people say, well, what is God? In other words, why did God allow sin and suffering? He could have stopped it. Why did he allow it? Well, I maintain he did it so that at some point in the future he can demonstrate to all intelligences anywhere and says, look, I gave these creatures free will, totally free will, yeah. And I can confirm that for you. They chose not to obey me, and they caused myself and my son and the Holy Spirit pain by a schism in the Godhead. And look at the pain it cost me to get them back. And therefore, he can demonstrate his grace.
Yes.
So that what I and of course, if we tried to do something like that, that would be horrible. It'd be selfish and all. But God is all good. So when he points
okay.
to his good,
now, see,
then that's
I wonderful. Think that's saying what I'm saying, that 4 is not true. A world in which that happens is preferable over a world in which, say, 3 people exist and never sin, so they always do the right thing, or that there's a world without any suffering. I could well see a world such as you've described would be preferred by God over a world that has no suffering at all. So I think that would call 4 really into question. Well, we're out of time, but we can return to this next time we meet to answer any further questions. But I think you can see in summary that in assuming the truth of 3 and 4, the atheist has made incredibly strong assumptions for which there's really no good reason, that we have every reason, I think, to be skeptical of 3 and 4, and that therefore no sort of contradiction or inconsistency has been shown between God's being all-powerful and all-good and the existence of suffering in the world.
The copyright for the content of this recording is held by Dr. William Lane Craig. For more, go to reasonablefaith.org.